Yeah. All right. Well, welcome everybody this morning. I hope you all feeling good. Today we're going to talk about Network Monitor 3.4. And I don't know how many people have seen this presentation before. All right, that's good. We've actually just released 3.4, or we're going to release it in beta in a couple minutes. So this is some new material here, plus a lot of the old stuff, just to kind of get you situated. And the idea is this is a tool that will help you understand the documentation, make sure you can make sure your interoperability experience goes well. So first of all, who am I? I'm the technical evangelist. I work in the Windows Interoperability Tools Group, and we create tools so that you guys can interoperate with Windows machines. And I have a blog, talk about Network Monitor and how to use it and troubleshooting. We also run our beta on Kinect, so this 3.4 beta will be available there fairly soon. Before this, I was a CPR networking specialist, and CPR was our critical problems resolution group where we troubleshoot issues from customers. So I had a lot of networking experience before this. I also work out of Charlotte, so if you ever have a chance to talk to me, I'm on the East Coast, so here earlier in the morning, but not as late as Redmond. And then finally, a personal note, I built a recording studio in my garage. I'm into recording and music and stuff like that, so interesting personal note. So before I start here, how many people use protocol analyzers? Most of you? How many use Wireshark? Curious. Okay. And how many use Network Monitor before? All right, good. One person that has some familiarity. Well, some of the things I hope you can take away from this is that, first of all, I want you to know how to capture, filter, and basically use Network Monitor to find data you need to find. Second of all, I've changed this bullet a couple times, and now it says finding interoperability issues without reading the protocol docs. So maybe the interesting point here is maybe you don't have to go read all the documentations. Our protocols are based off the documentations, so you could actually use our tool to find errors in the protocol, and then you could go back and reference the doc. I'm not saying you don't have to use it at all, but it would actually help in certain cases where you have trace data, and I'll show you some more details on how to do that. And then finally, I'd like to show you how to document issues, because lots of times you've got to pass us a trace or pass us information in a trace, and there's certain simple ways of getting that data out of Network Monitor rather than doing screenshots, which is what a lot of people default to. But we're going to talk about a lot more than that. So let's go into a little bit of background. So we have the timeline in Network Monitor, so just so you guys get an idea. It actually began a long time ago in Windows 4 workgroups back in 92. And there was two versions, 1 and 2, that our team has really nothing to do with. We kind of inherited the idea and the project, but we rewrote the whole thing. So there's this, I call it the Network Monitor Dark Ages, because there's this long period of time when no development was done, parsers became stale, nothing happened. So finally we came along and in 2006 released 3.0, and you can see that we've released new versions every 9 to 12 months or so. So we're in this model where we try to put new versions out frequently so if there's a problem that we can update it and fix it. So our team, we had a new vision. Let's see if I can get this thing working. A new team, a new design. We wanted to start fresh, so we redesigned everything from the start. And this is the latest version here, just a picture showing you some of the features and the different things that we can do. We'll go into details. And we had some goals when we started. We wanted to make capturing easy. We wanted to make it very simple to get a capture, because that's the typical scenario. Filtering. We wanted to make filtering easy, because that's what you do a lot. So we provided some tools to do that. Easy in general. We needed the interface not to be very busy. You know, there's just certain things that people do all the time, so we made those things stand out. Safer. In the previous versions of Network Monitor, we had DLLs. And DLLs, as everyone knows, are kind of unsafe. Somebody could give you a DLL that could, you know, take over the operating system or install a rootkit or something. So our parsers are scripts that are built into the product, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. Performance, we want it to be performant, and we've continued to work on this. And especially in 3.4, you're going to notice some new features where we concentrate on that. Automatable, we wanted a way to script it so that you could add it to tests, scripts, and be able to do captures automatically. And then accuracy. We want it to be accurate on the part. I mean, that's the most important thing. If the parsers aren't accurate, you're not getting anything out of it. So That is something we focus on, and we continue to update our parsers monthly, which we'll talk about as well. Oh, yeah. Okay, so let's talk about just using Network Monitor. And this is the first page that will come up if you start Network Monitor without double-clicking on a capture file. Double-click on a capture file will bypass this. So not that big a deal, but the things you'll miss is that we always show you what's new, kind of just have like a little page that has some information, pointers to the blog and different resources on the web that you can get to. So it's a good page to look at least once. And then we also have the recent captures over here on the right side, on the left side, so that you can get your most recent captures really easily. And obviously you can open a new capture or open an old capture or start a new capture. And then we also have the select network adapters on the side that you can select before you start a capture. You can change those live actually in Network Monitor. And one of the cool things that Network Monitor does is it allows you to capture on multiple adapters at the same time. So this means if you have a dual NIC machine, like an ISOBox or some kind of machine that has multiple NICs on it, you can capture at the same time on all those NICs. So, yes, so you can check which NICs you want to capture as well, and there's more than just NICs, it's all interfaces, so there's actually tunneling interfaces that show up as well there, the Endis WAN mini ports like RAS or VPN connections. So, and yes, you can select all of them, one of them, not sure if you can select none of them, but I don't know why you'd want to do that. All right, so this is very simple stuff, and actually I'll just do demo on it. This is like baselining to me. If you can't do this, so to start a capture, we're on the start page, new capture. And again, the select network adapters were there. You can also, we have this new button, we've kind of changed this in 3.4. We have a capture settings dialog. And in the capture settings dialog, you can create a capture filter. So you can limit the number of stuff you see initially, and then you can pick your adapters. And this floats on top. I guess I could try to keep it on top. I don't have a lot of screen real estate, but. And so now all you do is hit start, and that's it. Start a capture. You'll see frames start coming in, assuming that they have wireless traffic. There we go. And you can change these adapters live. So I could actually take off my wireless adapter and stop catching there and click another one. I can also apply capture filters live. And when you apply a capture filter in Network Monitor, it records the capture filter in the trace. So if you're getting a trace from somebody else, you know what they did. You're not going to be like, all of a sudden this traffic disappeared, what happened? It records the capture filter in the trace. So if I apply this, I'll close this. And another feature we've had in the last version was our auto-scroll feature, which allows you to see the latest traffic last, or first, rather. And so it'll automatically scroll as new traffic comes in. And so if I look, I should be able to find the fact that I applied that filter. And of course, there's probably a lot of... rather than go look for it. It's in there. There's a frame that says, and we could do a filter as well to find that trace. So that's a very simple scenario. Just starting a capture, something you want to be able to do. And so now we all know how to do that simple step. This is the capture tab. So let's actually go over the pieces of the capture tab just so everybody knows the different pieces. So the first part I point out is the frame summary. These are all the new frames that are coming in. And once you click on a frame, this area, frame details, gets populated. And this is just every single field that appears in that frame that is parsed by our parsers. And we'll talk about parsers in a little bit, but by default, we have a simple parser set, and you get a more expansive parser set that's more granular. Once you select a field in the frame details, which is just basically this tree structure, well, the hex details is automatically populated, but once you select a field, you'll see that it'll highlight the field in the hex details. So now what's also cool is that I can double-click in the hex details. If I see something here that I want to know what field it corresponds to, I can double-click in the hex details, and it'll highlight the field on the other side. So sometimes it's nice to go backwards as well. Then above, we have our display filter. And again, this is actually an old screenshot. The display filter is the only thing that's up here now. We've moved the capture filter and select networks to that dialog. And aliases is also a separate dialog. But this is where you can type your display filters and basically filter out the traffic based on the display filter. It doesn't, you know, affect the capture information. It's just what's displayed after the fact. And then finally, on the left side, we have the network conversations window. And this is the window which provides a view of your data that basically collates it based on things we call conversations. And I'll go into that in more detail as well later. All right, so is there any questions so far? No? Okay, so let's talk about some 3-4 things since we've added some new features here. And these are some of the UI, we call them a UI refresh because we didn't change the whole UI, but we've changed some of the things around a little bit based on our user feedback. So the first one is profile management. I'm going to talk about that in more detail in a second, but basically we have profiles for parser sets. So in the previous versions, we had a way to change the parsers, but our parser set basically defines what you can parse. So again, I'll talk about that in a little bit more detail. We now have window layouts. So before you can move your windows around, we now give you 3 different options for windows layouts, and you can modify all 3 of them. So the idea is that you might have one layout that gives you a lot of horizontal space so you can see the full frame summary, and you might have other layouts where you could change things around. So you can, again, customize these, but we give you 3 to begin with, and you can change those 3 layouts. We've updated our color rules. Before we had a single color rule, you basically set it up, you have one color rule. We now have a way of exporting color rules and importing them so you can share them with your friends. And you can also import other people's color rules and add them to your current set. You can disable and enable them. Column management, we've also added a way to provide different column layouts. So for instance, you have a column layout, and before you could customize what fields you see, and maybe that'll make more sense when I show you the main screen. But generally, we have 4 layouts that get loaded automatically based on the file type. So for instance, if you load a PCAP file, we show different columns. Because there is no process information in a PCAP file, why show that column? You don't need to see it anymore. But you can update those as well for yourselves and customize them the way you want them to be. So there's those 4, and there's 2 extra ones, a TCP troubleshooter and an HTTP troubleshooter, which allows you to, when you load those column layouts, it shows you HTTP-specific or TCP-specific data like the source port, destination port, the flags, the sequence numbers. And you can update, you can change those as well. You can't change the names, but you can make them whatever you want them to be if you don't look at TCP or HTTP traffic. Another feature that was asked for internally and might be an external ask as well is fixed font. Before we had a non-fixed font for the frame summary, frame summary line, and some people wanted the fields to line up like the sequence numbers, they wanted it all to be the same length. So now you can select that you want to use a fixed font, and there's actually some registry entries you can choose your fixed font if you want to change that. And then the final thing I wanted to bring up is live experts. Live experts, we had experts in the past, but the problem was you had to save a trace before you can use the expert. So this was, we didn't want it to work that way. We wanted it to be available in live experts when you do a live trace, so that as soon as you get a trace, you can run an expert on it. And that's something we've enabled in the latest 3.4 version. So before I go in and show a little bit of a demo of these, I'm going to go back to the parser profiles. And what has happened over time is that we've added more parsers. We found that our engine slows down, and there's certain reasons for this, certain design reasons that we couldn't optimize that out. So what we did is we decided to give you a range of parser sets that you could choose. And you can add your own parser sets. You can customize them, create your own. But basically, this chart shows you that as you get more parsing completeness, things slow down, the performance slows down. And so we have these different sets this is not to scale or anything, but the pure set does nothing. And in fact, the pure set's there in case you don't install any parsers. But it doesn't parse anything. And in fact, there might be some scenario when you want to use the pure parser set to get the timestamps in a large trace, and it would open really quickly in that case. We have a high-performance capture set. That's what HPC, and we're going to talk about high-performance filtering a little bit later. A faster filtering parse set, the default, and then MS is all the parse, well, all the Windows parser set, which is the slowest, but the most complete. Any questions on that? Yeah.
You say source down. Is it because it's CPU bound, or how do you get how much performance if you really need?
CPU bound. So basically, the parsing process, it basically takes CPU. So the more complex the parsing set, the longer it takes for us to search through the list of available parts. I mean, it's just all these basically, I'd say, design problems that we have as far as dealing with lots of parsers. So it just takes a lot longer to parse that set because there's a lot more tree decisions to be made. Yes, definitely. I mean, faster CPU. On my machine, I often run with the MS set just fine, but there's certain cases where I don't need it, and the default set's fast, and filtering will be faster. Everything will be faster. Filtering, loading up, just bringing up the trace initially because we have to parse through the set. So those two operations are faster when you have a faster parser set.
But not the capture.
So what about the capture? So capturing is interesting because there's two scenarios in capturing. You could just capture and not do any filtering. That doesn't get affected at all by the parser set in certain situations, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. But basically, we recommend using the command line nmcap if you want the fastest performance. And when you don't do a filter, it doesn't matter what parser set you have. But if you're doing capture filtering, then the parser set you choose does make a difference. And it's because it has to evaluate the frames before we can save them to the file, right? And there's some interesting problems that we'll talk about. So we talked about the UI, but the next thing is nmcap. Interesting you brought that up. So nmcap is our command line tool that allows you to do capturing. And it provides a couple of features that the UI cannot do. So it's command line, which means it's scriptable and automatable. The filtering is just like the UI, so it's the same kind of filter. You don't have IntelliSense or anything. But if you have a filter that works in the UI, it'll work in nmcap as well, which is just a string that you add. You can capture live, or you can capture from a file. So for instance, if you wanted to post-process a capture file, you could take an input. A capture file is an input, and like get all the TCP data out of it or something like that. It can chain capture files together. So I actually should have probably talked about the other option. You can create different type of capture files. So with the UI, it's just one long capture file. Captures forever. There's no way to circular capture, chain capture, nothing like that. The UI just keeps on going until it runs out of memory, which is one of the reasons you want to use nmcap if you're going to let it run for a while. But the features for capturing are the chain captures. You can do multiple 20 meg capture files forever. Or you can do circular capture files, which you say for 400 megs, it's basically a FIFO, 400 megs, I just want to capture, and when I get to the end, I want to wrap around. So you never eat up more than 400 megs of disk space. But you only capture the last X seconds or X minutes, depending on how much traffic you have coming in. There's also a rich set of stop and start features so that you can stop it when an event occurs, a network event, or stop it in 10 minutes. So that's something else that nmcap gives you. And then finally, it's automatically in the past. So if you just run command, type nmcap, it's right there. You don't have to go looking for it anywhere. So when I'm working with somebody on the phone or trying to tell somebody how to do something, I'm not going to go through the UI. I'm going to send them a batch file or send them, hey, type this in and just run it, and then you'll get the capture you need. It's much, much more simple.
Yeah. 50 packets outboard and then stop or something like that.
So it's not that flexible. You can say stop when and a time. So you can say 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 10:35 tomorrow. You can use that. But you can also stop it on network traffic. So you can say stop when IPv4 address equals 1.2.3.4 and it's an ICMP message. So you can stop it when you send it a ping across the network. So for instance, you could have a batch file that sends a ping and stops nmcap when it sees that ping. And I actually have a blog on this, and if I haven't included it in the notes, I'll put it in there. But that's a typical case when you stop it on an event, for instance, in the event log. There's actually a tool we released on Coplex, the open source, you know, it's just all the sources out there, that uses event log triggers to stop a capture. So you can say, you know, stop it when I see event 1000 in the event log, for instance. All right, I say demo, so let me just show you. Well, command line tools are boring to demo, but. Probably the only reason I'm going to demo this is because, I'll do the help first. The problem with command line tools is there's a ton of parameters on it, and people look at it and they're like, okay, I don't know how to use this. This is crazy. But what we do have is if you do nmcap/examples and you spell it correctly, it'll show like 10 various examples on how to fix things, on how to use. So for instance, a very simple example. Can everyone see that? I don't know. I could probably, okay. So in this case, we're just capturing on all networks, so you can specify the networks there as well. We're doing a TCP filter, so I'm only capturing TCP data, and I'm saving it to a file, tcp.cap. So the examples is probably the best way to learn to use the nmcap rather than reading the help, and there's 10 there, like I mentioned before, and it has some of the stop when. You can see the stop when, time after 10 minutes, and there's various examples that go over that as well. Okay, so that's it for nmcap. Not exactly. This slide's a little bit. So next thing I want to do is just kind of show some of the differences between nmcap and the UI, because there are some other differences. One of the differences used to be process tracking. You used to not have that in nmcap, but we've added this in 3.4 now. So this is a new feature that allows you to use process tracking, which is basically showing what process sent the traffic, where we can figure out how to associate that information. And I'll show you a little bit more on that later, process tracking. We've added this new feature, hyperf filtering, which I'm going to talk, and they both have this new feature in 3.4. Wireless monitoring. We have this ability to monitor wireless traffic. So we can put the wireless NIC in a special mode that looks at all traffic, you know, all the beacons and all that stuff. But you can only do that from the UI. You can capture wireless traffic, but you can't do this special monitoring mode with nmcap. Why can't you do it from nmcap? We could have done it, but one of the main reasons is there's this dialogue that comes up and you select. And to tell you the truth, I don't know, now that you mention it, it's possible. The dialogue actually puts it in the wireline mode, and it's an executable that just runs. So I guess you might be able to run the executable to the side and then run nmcap. I've never really tried that before, so it might be possible. But the dialogue, I'm not going to really show this, but the dialogue allows you to select which wireless networks to look on, and specify an interval, so it'll scan for 1 second and then move to the next one, so you can scan across all the channels and all the Wi-Fi types. We didn't do it because we haven't gotten around to providing that type of command line interface, but might be possible to do that. I've never really tried that before. So low profile, what I mean by there is that nmcap can run forever, months, capturing fine as long as you don't run out of disk space. UI will crash or freeze or get to a point. So I get this I get this email a lot that they've been running the UI, and now they try to save the file, and it doesn't save. And it's because we've run out of resources in the UI. We've just eaten up all this memory and all these GUI resources, and we can't save anymore. And there is a workaround that sometimes works, but people get in this situation all the time. I'm like, well, you should have used nmcap, and I know that there's this sort of disconnect. You know, people see the UI, and they think that that's the thing they should use. But if you're going to run for a long time, use nmcap. That's the best tool. Run for weeks. Nmcap is automatable, and the UI isn't. So nmcap allows, a lot of these cool, you can put in a script file, run in a batch file, because it's command line. UI, you can't do that. And then finally, nmcap has all the different flexible capture file formats. It's circular, chain captures, etc. UI didn't have any of that. UI just, again, captures forever. It just keeps on going. All right, any questions on that? No? All right, so now you know how to get a capture. You know what tool you want to use based on your scenario if you want to run for a long time. And one of the things you might want to use the UI for is, since it updates live, you want to, maybe you want to do something and see what happens on the network. So that might be a scenario for the UI. But here's some other things to consider in general when you're doing a capture. And this is true of any tool. So first of all, the traffic has to arrive at the capturing machine. And while this makes perfect sense, obviously it has to get there. But there are situations that traffic you expect to see won't show up. So the typical one is if you're on a network, a switch or something, with two other machines, and you're the third party capturing, switches are smart. They say, oh, you don't need to see that traffic. You won't even see it, and you won't capture that traffic. Even if you put the machine in promiscuous mode, the switch has actually caused that traffic to not get to your box because it's being smart, or a smart hub as well. So P mode is one way to solve this. The P mode works by saying, all right, even though this machine is not destined for my box, oops, I'm tapping the mic, it will still capture that data. So as long as the NIC, you know, actually sees the traffic, it'll capture that data in promiscuous mode, even if it's not destined, even if the address is not a broadcast or destined to that box via the port or the addresses that NIC is listening on. So you can enable P mode per adapter, but still it has to arrive at the box. So sometimes you have to put a hub, an old dumb hub, if you want to see traffic between two boxes. And the other option available with smart switches and routers are sometimes you can span or mirror ports. So you often have to get IT folks involved to do that. But just a general thing to consider, you know, you're not always going to get traffic unless it's going to that box. Another problem is so capture filtering is nice. If you've got this huge stream of data and you only want to capture a small bit of it, capture filter kind of allows you to do this. But sometimes you get too narrow, right? For instance, in Network Monitor, when you say HTTP, if you type in a filter HTTP, which only captures HTTP traffic, you're going to miss all the fragments because we don't detect those as HTTP until they're reassembled, which doesn't have automatically. So if you're going to do a capture filter, usually TCP.port is kind of safe. You know, that's a fairly safe filter to do, except for there are cases like maybe you want to see ARP packets. Maybe you want to see lower-level networking packets that you're going to miss if you filter too much. You also want to monitor drop frames. On really fast networks, especially 1 gigabit networks today, we can drop frames. It's going to happen every once in a while, especially on a busy network. So both in the UI and NMCAP, we have a drop frames status that shows you if they drop. So, you know, if you're working remote, I mean, if you're working on your box, you'll probably see it. But if you're working with somebody else and they send you a trace, you might want to ask them, hey, did you see any drop frames? Because you'll be looking at the trace and there'll be stuff missing. You won't know what's going on. And then finally, this new high perf capturing filtering. So let's talk about this in some more detail. This is a new feature we added for 3.4. I think this is the next slide. Okay, so this is our previous 3.3 behavior. We would get frames, and we would store the frames on the disk before we even parsed them. Then we parse and filter them and finally write them to the end capture file. So the reason we did this was to avoid the drop frames issue. And as we were talking about before, parsing is expensive. It takes a lot of CPU cycles. So you can imagine if you have a million frames coming in and you can only parse one per second, then you might not be able to keep up with that traffic before you can even write it to the capture file. So in 3.3 we said, okay, and we did this before 3.3, but we write the file first to a buffer, basically, and then parse after the fact. Now, one of the indications of this in 3.3 is we have a pending frame indicator in NMCAP and the UI, and you'll see it go up. The pending frames will go up and up and up. And if you see that happening, you're probably not going to be able to keep up with the traffic. You're basically in a situation that you're going to lose sooner or later, drop packets or whatever. So we decided that to try to improve on this behavior in some specific scenarios for 3.4. And there I'm showing the frames backing up, basically as we get too much data that we cannot keep up with. So we've created this new thing we call high performance capturing in Network Monitor 3.4. So we had the previous behavior before, but now what we've done is we've allowed you to specify some specific filters that will process before we save them to this root chain capture file we call, to the buffer. Basically we evaluate them before we get to the buffer. And the way we can do this is we can fully qualify the path. So you can imagine that when you type in IPv4.address equal equal something, and that's how you do our filtering for an IPv4 address, that there's actually many locations where that can appear in a frame. It might be buried within an ICMP redirect. It might be a tunneled piece of traffic. So what we said is that okay, well, if you give the fully qualified path, that will narrow it down to one location for the things we support, which means we can look at it as a pattern offset match, which means we can do it quickly. So what we did is we created this high-performance parser set, which is really limited, very small. And by specifying these fully qualified paths, we can parse them and filter them before we write them to the root chain capture file, before we buffer them. Now, there is one problem with this, is that even on a really slow machine, this still might not be fast enough. We still might get into a situation where we can't keep up. So we've devised this flow control. And this flow control is basically some registry settings that once we can't keep up, we detect we can't keep up, we go back to the old method. And then once we feel like we've been able to capture fine for a while, we'll switch back to the flow to this method before where we'll parse them before. So you get to a situation where we can, you know, maybe for a burst, you'll get a big network burst of traffic. We'll say, okay, we can't keep up with that. Let's pen those. And then we catch up, and then we say, okay, well, let's go back, and now we can filter and we can keep up. So the basic advantage of this is that we don't fill up your hard drive with a big buffer of data you don't need. And for filtering situations where you filtering 99% of the traffic out, as long as we can keep up, this is a win for you. We basically only write the frames that are going to the capture file, and we can keep up with the traffic for, you know, a port, you know, if you want to do a TCP port, IP address, Ethernet addresses. Now, the thing is these filters are limited. There's only, I don't know how many, but there's basically it's Ethernet addresses, IPv4, IPv6 addresses, and then TCP port, UDP port, and then also all the same ones on wireless as well. Now, to help you understand what these are, because you're not going to know unless someone tells you, is we have this thing called standard filters in the UI. And by the way, it works in the UI and in NCAP as well. And under NM34 high perf capture, the standard filters, which I can show you in a second, we have a list of some of the basic things you'd want to do. So Ethernet addresses, just like I mentioned before. And you can combine these together, by the way. So if you have an Ethernet address and an IPv4 port address, you can put them together. So does that make sense? Anybody have questions on this? No? All right. So that's all we're going to talk about capturing right now. Let's talk about diving deep into a frame. This is basically, you've got a capture now, you've got a frame, and you want to find some data in it. You want to learn how to find the information you want to locate. So we want to figure out how to dig into the frame details. We want to work with filters. We'll talk about conversation trees. We're also going to talk about reassembly, which is a topic all in itself. And then some of these things before, finding protocol document references and annotating traces. I talked to some of the key takeaways, so we'll discuss those. So I could go over this slide, but I think what I'm going to do is actually just demo most of this. So let's just do that. So let's just go to a trace that I have open before. And again, once you click on a frame, it shows the details here. Like I said before, you can double-click here, and it shows the field. So I double-clicked in the hex details, and it brings up and highlights where it is on the other side, some stuff like that. One of the things that another complaint we get is that the default highlight color, it's called the non-focus highlight color, is a very light gray. This is, I mean, you'll see this in everything, Outlook, everything. It's hard to see, so I actually changed mine darker just to make it show up. But what people will tell me is that, you know, when I click on frame details, nothing gets highlighted over here, and it's because it's just the color is really bad by default. Okay, so there's also decode as. So there might be some cases where the data isn't getting parsed properly, but you know what it is. You say, hey, this packet, this hex details, is a TCP frame or whatever it is. So you can highlight the data and use the decode as and then choose any of the protocols or structures that are in the parsing set to force the parsing. Now, this only works for one frame. Another question we get is, well, what if I want to parse all these frames as TCP? And we can't really do that. The way you do that today is by modifying the parsers, which is fairly simple to do, but You know, we've often got requests so you can right-click and parse is something. Okay, so reassembly. We're going to talk about this in more detail later, but basically, we don't reassemble by default. When you take a trace, it's only fragments. And now if you use Wireshark, it actually automatically reassembles the data for you so you see a fully, you know, reassembled frame. We don't do that. But what you need to look for is that if you see these continuation frames occur and you want to look at that payload data, that should be your clue to say, hey, you know, we need to do some reassembly. And I have some slides on that later. Okay, so the finally thing I wanted to show you in this particular slide is goes to the documenting trace information. So say you want to send a trace to Microsoft, or you want to send some data to Microsoft or to anybody, a friend, and you want to put it in an email, or you want to copy this information out of a text file and search the whole text file for data inside here. Well, you can highlight frames and copy the data, and it'll just copy a text representation separated by tabs. So now if I run Notepad or something, this data is text, and it's easier to edit. And now when I go look at the data, I can scroll over and be able to look at all the data rather than just a picture that gets cut off. And since it's tab separated, you can bring it to Excel. It automatically, you know, does the column because Excel knows how to deal with the tabs. If you bring it to a Word message, you can put a table around it, and it automatically sets it up for you so you can look at it as a table. So it's really easy to work with. Now, the same thing holds true for the frame details. So what we do here is we take a picture of all your open trees, and you can also copy the one element, but I'm going to do the whole tree. And now it does a copy based on what you have open. So again, it's a text representation, very easy to work with, has all the information, much better than a picture in my opinion. Well, at least in terms of showing information. The trace is probably the best, but if you just want to pass some information really quick. And you can do the same thing in the hex details. It actually kind of formats it a little weird. It does the hex first and then the data second. It's kind of useful in some cases. Some people like this actual view, which is something we don't support. And you can do the network conversations as well. So all those things are, you know, have the ASCII cut and paste available to you. All right. So let's talk about filtering in general. How do you filter out your data so you can see only the frames you want to see? So first of all our filtering, anytime you type in a filter, it's always the same. There is no capture filter different than a color filter. It's all the same language, which is kind of convenient. We have standard filters built in, which I just talked about before. But standard filters, and I've got to update this picture, because now it says standard filters on the UI. In fact, I'll just show you. So now we have this thing that says load filter. So one of the UI changes we made it kind of put words on everything because some people were kind of confused about what our icons meant. So when you go to load filters, you have a bunch of standard filters. And so these things kind of help you learn how to build a filter. When you don't have any idea, you just say, okay, well, show me an example of an address filter, maybe IPv4. So we put some comments on there. And that's basically how to do an address filter. So it's a simple way to learn how to do filtering. You can also create your own filters and store them, and then they'll also show up here under Load and then My Filters. So you might have a set of your own filters that you've created that you use all the time. So the next thing I know is in this slide is IntelliSense. So IntelliSense allows you to build your filters using IntelliSense kind of, you've probably seen Visual Studio or whatever. So if you type a dot, a period, IntelliSense pops up and shows you the list of all the available top-level items. And so now I can type in protocol. And now it shows me all the protocols. TCP shows me all the TCP. So IntelliSense helps you build a filter to find these elements very simply. Now, one thing is once you know where the filter, where the item is, you don't have to start from the root with the dot all the time. for instance, I can type in TCP. I know that that's a protocol, and then I can type dot, and I still get the IntelliSense. So you don't have to always start from dot, but starting from dot is where you start when you don't know what you're doing. All right, another filtering tool help that's probably the best one, or at least if you have data you're looking at already, and you see a field that you want to filter on. For instance, I see IPv4, and I want to find total length. In fact, I want to find all the frames that match this frame. Let me go ahead and erase this because. Now you can right-click, add selective value display filter, and it'll add the filter based on the field you selected, which with the data you selected. So again, if you have a frame you're looking at already, very easy way to get. And this is probably the best way, especially once you get down into all the crazy protocols, you know, the Windows protocols. Some of these get really long, and it's almost impossible to figure out. This is probably the easiest way to figure it out once you have a trace. Now, you can also do this for columns. So, for instance, if I see that this source is what I want to do a filter on, I can do the display filters of source. Now, you notice that it did it as a string instead of an IP address. That's because all these fields, all these column fields are strings. They're stored as strings in our data. So you could search on description as a string, source, destination, protocol name. Anything you put up here as a column can be searched on. That makes sense? And then finally, there's filter help in the help file itself. So you can go look at the help. There's a help section that kind of has some background information on creating filters. And creating filters is probably one of the challenging things when you first use a product. And Wireshark has their fields you probably get used to. So once you get used to these fields, it's not much different. You know, it's the same kind of idea. You can do and, or, all that kind of stuff. So these are the clever tricks I just went over. Basically, right-click, add to filter. You can do it on frame details, column headers. And another thing we've added for 3.4 is color filters. You can add the selected value as a color filter. It'll automatically bring up the color filter dialog. You can pick the colors you want, and now you've got a color filter. So we've kind of streamlined going to the color filters, which was kind of a hidden feature before. It's now a button on our UI. And then finally, the last one that a lot of people don't use, but it's actually pretty useful, is you can control F. So, you know, you go into a product, you type control F, and find the next frame that matches. This doesn't filter. It just basically finds the next frame that matches a filter. So, you know, if you're looking for the next HTTP filter, you do control F, type HTTP, and just keep on controlling F to go to the next one, as opposed to filtering them all out. So here are some filtering examples, just to kind of give you an idea of all the different things you can do. The first one, MSRPC or LDAP. So you can use or, and. You can also use the C, ampersand, and the C or if you prefer that instead. Though I will tell you that if you can use NMCAP, some of those are special characters, so it's almost easier using the words for NMCAP. TCP port .80, very common thing to do. You can filter on properties. So properties is basically metadata we create while we're parsing a frame. And so for this instance, conversation.processName is this process tracking feature, which I'm going to show you in a second. But basically, you can search on the process name that caused that traffic. Property.protocol is that column protocol that appears. And color filters, just some examples. In fact, this one is one of the ones I referenced in the, you know, don't have to read the documentation. We have this thing called parser error. So if we don't parse something properly in our parser set, we'll flag this structure called parser error. So you could create a filter that says parser error, that one right there. In fact, I could do it. Won't find anything because I don't think I have any parser errors. But I can type in parser error. Apply it as a filter, and now it'll show only those frames that have parser errors. So if you've got this protocol and you're writing SMB or you're writing some certificate protocol and you're trying to interoperate with Microsoft, and you find something goes wrong, you can take a trace, look for these errors, and this will signify any place in the trace where we didn't parse it properly. We build our parsers based on the documentation. That's how we build the parsers. We give them our parser developers the documentation and say, go build a parser. You don't know anything else. So they're going to be tied and be basically exactly alike. So you could find problems, at least differences in the protocol based protocol as compared to the documentation, just based on doing this parser error filter. So does that make sense? It's kind of a, to me, this is better than reading the documentation to figure out what's wrong. You know, just get a trace, if you can get a trace, run parser error and see what pops up. And that might get some, you know, red flags right off the bat, make it easier to troubleshoot. Then we talked about color rules, and we've moved the button. It's right here. Now you can see it. Hopefully people use it. And I could create a parser error filter. And maybe I'll make the background white and the foreground, I mean the background red and the foreground white. And now all those frames with parser errors will stick out. You know, they'll be highlighted basically as red if I had any in there. And then finally, there's two special types of, we call them plugins, but basically they're ways to search strings, contains and contains bin. So in the first case, in contains, it allows you to search for either Unicode or ASCII text in any property or data field. So for instance, in this example, I'm looking up http://request.uri, where it contains the word Microsoft in the, you know, in the HTTP request. Simple text search, but it'll allow you to search for Unicode and ASCII. That's important because we're going to compare it to the next one. The next one, contains bin, is a little bit different. It allows you to search binary data. So the one of the limitations which contains is that the data has to be ASCII to begin with. If it's a mixture of ASCII and binary data, it's not going to work. So you can use contains bin, and the main way to use contains bin, you can use it sometimes, and as sort of in this instance, you could say contains bin there, but I don't really recommend that. The best way to use it is to look for the whole frame. So you type contains bin frame data, which is just the whole entire frame. Then you specify what you're looking for. So another difference is that you have to tell it to look for ASCII, Unicode, or hex data. You're going to tell it what to look for. And then you can type the string. So the powerful thing here is that, so for instance, if you got a trace and you want to see if you've been surfing any sites and maybe your social security went off in a cookie somewhere or your telephone number, you just do this, search for the whole frame data, search for that value. And so you can also do hex in here and search for like, you know, 05 space BA space, I mean, for instance. And in fact, there's the there's a standard filter called search frame, which shows you how to do this. Was there a question?
If I go for a new line, should I use ASCII filter? Can I say backslash n, for example?
Or? No, you would. In that case, I would use a hex filter. So I would go ahead and do, I'd find out what the hex is you're looking for, and I would just convert it. So for instance, contains bin frame data hex, and then 13, I'm sorry, OA, OD, or whatever. So that's how you would enter the data in for that. And usually you have to find an example. I mean, I would, either that, you can figure it out, I suppose. But that's the best way to look for string. The hex data, if you know what it is, that's probably the best way because it's, you know, it's a perfect description of what you're looking for. But the ASCII and Unicode is helpful as well. If you just know that string data exists somewhere. All right. So now let's talk about any questions on filtering in general? No? Okay. So now let's talk about conversations. So what are exactly conversations? It's basically a logical grouping of frames. And it's a visual way to zero in on frames because when you click in the conversation tree, it filters on that traffic. So if you click on TCP, it's going to show you, it's going to basically apply the filter, right? TCP port equal 52602 and or TCP port 443. It's basically looking for, I mean, and the, that combination of ports. And you can select anything. You can select Internet Explorer to see all the traffic created by Internet Explorer. So it includes processes. So what we do is when you take a trace with Network Monitor, and you have to take a trace with Network Monitor because we collect this data. You can't take a Wireshark capture and look at the process information. So when you take a trace with Network Monitor, with the UI, and now with NMCAP and 3.4, we continually poll and look for processes and then associate that with the port information that comes in. Now, there is a chance that we might miss this. There might be a case where a process comes up real quick and disappears before we have a chance to loop, because we're basically polling this data using these standard APIs that have been around for quite a while. But for the most part, we capture. If it's a long-standing application in Explorer, appears for a long enough time, we'll capture that data. It also provides state. So maybe I should switch these around because they're defined by the parser. So first of all, the parser, the writer, says, I'm going to say what a conversation is. So in TCP, they have this line that says, all right, a conversation is where all the port information is the same. And the same thing's done at each level. And they're hierarchical so that TCP depends on IP. So the conversation between two IP addresses is the first level of hierarchy, and then all the ports depends on that. The process information is built from the parent. And this is, again, defined by the parser. So the parser writer can do it for whatever they want. In fact, they can do it for connectionless protocols, as long as they have some key that they can identify as that conversation. So for most of the protocols, TCP, IPv4, ESP, HTTP, we've defined the conversations in the parsers, but they can be changed, they can be updated, they can you could always do this for your own if you had some reason to change them. But we hope that we've built in all the basic ones. And so I say it provides state, meaning that some parsers use conversation as state information. So for instance, when you do a connection via SSL, we might save some state information inside the parser so that another frame later can reference that state, because there really is no state information in the frames itself, right? You've got to build memory and keep track of that yourself. So what this kind of means is that it's required by some parsers. You can turn conversations on, off. It's on by default now in 3.4. Saves memory. It's a little bit quicker. So maybe if you're looking at some low-level trace traffic and you don't need conversations, you can turn it on to make it quicker. But some parsers, SMB is the big one, requires conversations. Make sense, everybody? So here are some clever tricks that you can use, because you can use this when you're doing filters. So for instance, if I have the conversation tree, so like I mentioned before, let me remove my filter. So actually, before I did that, I want to show you that when you apply a filter, it tells you what the filter is right here, TCP port. And then it also tells you if you've selected something in the conversation tree, because it filters at the same time. So what sometimes happens is that you'll click in the conversation tree somewhere down deep, and then you'll apply a filter, and you'll be confused because no frames show up. And that's because these two are happening at the same time. So when that happens, make sure that you click back at the top of conversation tree. But like I mentioned, when you click on a conversation, it filters on that traffic. So now it's only showing me this TCP traffic in the frame summary. So another cool thing you can do with conversations is you can right-click the conversation, and I can say copy a filter to the clipboard, and now I can add it here. So this kind of lets you select multiple conversations. It might be nice if you could select multiple conversations in the conversation tree, but you can't because it's a standard control, and we haven't enabled that yet. But you can do this basically by saying, okay, well, I want to see this one or this one. And as long as I click at the top of the tree to make sure I disable the conversation filter and apply this one, now I get both those traffic streams put together. Take a look. See what else I wanted to show you. Okay, so the other cool thing that I do with conversation tree is that often I'll want to get zeroed in on a conversation. Let's say that I have a ton of IP address. In fact, let's look at the a different trace. So in this case, I have a big set of frames, and as you probably all understand, this is not, you know, these two frames might not even be together at all. You really don't know that unless you inspect the data. But if you're on a frame and you know that you're interested in that frame, as I'm looking through here, I say, oh wow, I wish I knew all the traffic that had to do with that frame. We have this thing called find conversations. So this is in Wireshark, this is similar to follow the stream. I don't know, you probably use that feature a lot. So find conversations allows you to look for the TCP conversation. So if I click here, that'd be like follow the stream. But I can also do it at any layer that we define a conversation for. So I can say, okay, well, show me just the HTTP conversation. And now I see only the HTTP data there. And I can do it at the IPv4 level. So this locates, once I select or find the conversation, what it does is it highlights in the frame details the conversation it found, which causes us to do the filter. Basically, like you clicked on the conversation tree. So the next step after that is that once you've located something in the conversation tree, you can easily sort through these by just hitting down arrow. So what I mean is that I found this conversation, but now, you know, that one was kind of interesting, and I can sort of look and see what it did at a high level, but now I'm going to down arrow and look at the next one. So very quickly, I can scan through these. I don't have to do different filters. I just hit down arrow and say, okay, well, there's a SSL conversation, there's a HTTP request, it looks like a end of a conversation. So you can quickly scan these by just down arrowing the conversation trees, or sort of arranges all that data together so you can very easily locate similar traffic, or at least all the conversations under that one IP address. So it kind of gives you an interesting way to look at that data. Does that make sense? Does anyone understand what I'm talking about? All right, and then finally, so this request has come up a lot, that people want to be able to filter in the conversation tree, right? Sometimes you don't want to see all those conversations because you want to, you know, it's just too much information. I don't want to really look at every single IPv4 address. I just want to look at this one. What you can, there's no way to filter in the conversation tree, but a simple workaround, simple, is to save the frames and reopen it up again, right? So if I just select and I do file, save as, and then I say displayed frames, give it some name. Now I'll go back to my start page because that's the easiest way to get to the file I just saved. I'll now have limited the traffic to that part of the conversation tree, and then virtually, basically, I've filtered the conversation tree. So it's an extra couple of steps, but it's a way to do it if you ever have that need. All right, aliases. We're going to kind of get off the conversation. Any questions on conversations? No? Yes? Yeah. Yes, you will. So we build the conversation tree dynamically from the parser set. So as long as all the trace data is there, we can build that. We just don't get the process information. But yes, PCAP, any kind of trace that we can open up will be able to generate the conversation tree. Okay, aliases is a very simple idea where you can rename IP addresses, Ethernet addresses with friendly names, and then have them appear in this in the frame summary. So in this case, I've renamed an IP address to client and server, so now I don't have to memorize the IP port. You know, if you've seen enough IP addresses, I tend to forget what's the server and what's the client. This is a very easy way, one, to identify this traffic, but also if you're looking to get a new trace and you're kind of looking through and you're saying, all right, this looks like the server. I'm going to mark this as the server, and now it shows up as server, and you say, oh, okay, this must be a client then, client one, client two. It starts like making a picture as you name these things. And then one of the new things we added in 3, so in 3.3 you could do this, right-click to add the alias. We took that a step further, next logical step. In 3.4, now when you apply, I mean, when you add an alias by clicking on it, right-click, add as source, create alias for source address. It brings up the dialog. You fill in the name. and then it automatically applies it. So there used to be another step where you had to go in and actually apply the change. So now it automatically applies it, so it updates immediately, which makes it very, you know, you get the feedback right away that you've added this new alias. All right, that's it for aliases. We're going to go on to reassembly, which is it's a topic that historically is confusing because of the way we do it, I think. And the way we did it was based, I mean, we basically tried to develop quickly, you know, come up with a simple solution, crawl, walk, run. And so we've done these in stages. And so when we did a reassembly originally, you'll know that Wireshark automatically reassembles the data and sticks it in there. So I think that's pretty cool. You know, I've used Wireshark before. Problem is that it hides some of the things that happens. And so you don't see the fragmentation. I mean, you see it, but Wireshark does it in such a way that it makes the last frame the actual frame. So if you look at a Wireshark trace and a Netmon trace, they're going to look really different. So we decided not to do that, at least initially, and allow the user to say, okay, I want to reassemble trace, and now I want to see it reassembled after the fact. Protocols can fragment data at different layers, right? You have TCP, HTTP. I mean, everybody can do fragmentation, and a lot of times it does happen. And these fragments are not automatically reassembled. But as I showed you in the previous frame, I'm going to show you again, if you see continuations or you'll see information in the frame summary that tells you, hey, this must be fragmented data. So now you can hit the reassembly button, and a new trace will open up with the reassembled frames put in there. It's only available on a saved trace. So if you just ran a new trace, you're not going to see the reassembly button. So you got to save it, reopen it, and then hit the reassembly button. That's just the way we deal with new traces versus old saved traces. So here's an example. And in this case, I see this TCP continuation. So I say, oh, okay, it must be fragmented. And you know, I know HTTP gets fragmented by TCP. So let me go ahead and hit the reassembly button. So now I reassemble the trace, and this is my new trace, a portion of the new trace opened up. So what happens is we go through, do I have to 10:30? Oh, this is usually an hour and a half. just want me to stop? Yes. I could go through and see what the most important remaining slide is. I mean, I did want to talk. So frame commenting is something you can do. You can add comments to frames. That's kind of cool. The sysdocs. There's sysdocs out there that have traces that have been commented for you to describe how certain scenarios work. And there's some certificate-based traces out there, and I have a blog on this. Add some new features, UTC time zone. I was going to talk about the parsers. They're all built in the product, open source. So we update them monthly. Our developers actually work in open source. They actually, you know, work in CodePlex, where we have our source code. And they, so they're updated monthly, so you want to check there to make sure that you have the latest versions, because they are continually updated. And you can modify these parsers. You can change them and rebuild them. So I wasn't going to go into too much detail anyways, but there are things you can add in columns that you can see. You can change summary lines if you don't like the way they look. Last thing I was going to talk about, or the last two things, were the API. We have an API set that allows you to use our parser set and capturing engine. So if you want to write a program to parse the data and maybe do some validation on the data, anything you can imagine you can do here. And that's all described in our chum. We have example files in the help file. And this is just a quick rundown. You can read, write, capture data. You can read properties, conversations. And now we have something called driver filtering in our capture engine, which allows you to apply an offset pattern match in the driver. And then the final thing I was going to talk about is experts. Experts are programs that can be created with the API, not necessarily the API, that can be run within Network Monitor. And so the most important expert that comes up, and I don't know how critical as this group, but we have an SSL decryption expert externally. So if you have SSL traffic and the private cert, you can decrypt the traffic with this tool. Well, potentially you can decrypt traffic as long as you have all the traffic that you need to do. So we have this tool available. If you go to the experts menu and hit download experts, you see the available experts out there. And I guess I'll just stop it right there. The abridged version.
A lot, Paul.
All right.